back to the Alex Jones Show here on the Alex Jones Network. I'm your guest host, Roysha, in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota, cultural epicenter of American politics. And I'm just online, and just bear with me a moment. I'm shooting off a post here on X. And I'll read it to you because I think it's important to know what the people are saying out there. This is a post from Jeer 33 about 17 minutes ago. Showed people that I was live with the great Alex Jones on the great Alex Jones Network. All right. And thank you to Alex Jones and the Alex Jones Network for being trans affirming, for allowing me to be my authentic self this evening. And by the way, it's worth me mentioning that I was scheduled to do an interview with CNN, the great CNN, and they canceled. Now, I don't know if CNN has a problem with pro-life, black pro-life sometimes identifying as transgender women, but CNN canceled their interview. We were set to do an interview here tonight, and they canceled on me. I don't know why CNN would want to silence black women. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. But anyway, here's a post 17 minutes ago. It says, "What will your kids think of you being a clown like this? You should be disappointed, embarrassed, and honestly," here's the punchline, "a little suicidal as a man." "The fact that you carry out these kinds of theatrics just screams, I want attention." The theatrics, I mean, imagine that. The theatrics of me liberating the transgender that was buried so deep down for so long. The theatrics of me coming out and being my authentic self screams, I want attention. I should be suicidal. Now they're calling for me to commit suicide. But you know what? I'm not going to let the haters get to me, because Chaka Khan is the inspiration. Bring the Chaka Khan music back while I send off a tweet here. Just bring it back. Just bring the Chaka back. Because when you get that negativity and that hate, you got to get a little bit of music to inspire you and to kind of guide you and you know, feel the movement. And then that hate just kind of rolls off, right? You just let the haters hate. I need as many haters as I can possibly get. I'm in the business for more haters. I'm in the market. If you need somebody to hate on, please, hate on me. Let the haters get to us. Not gonna let the haters get to us. We are not gonna let these hateful, you can take the music away, take Chaka away. Chaka makes me want to dance. We're not gonna let you bigoted far left radicals discourage the glow up. I'm in my feminine era. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling like my authentic self. This is the glow up of my feminine era. And I'm not going to let the haters get me down. No, no. You guys, you don't bother me with your bigotry and your transphobia and your high and mighty thinking you can tell us black women when and where we can be black women. You think that as a black woman, that I don't live with the genetic memory of those slave children on the nipple all the way back 400, 500 years? I live with the memories of black women. You're watching the Alex Jones Show here on the Alex Jones Network. We'll be right back in a moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigly has launched an online pharmacy 1776RX.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776RX.health.
You are listening to an AJN Live Frontline Report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back to the resistance. Resistance. Here on the Alex Jones Network. The Alex Jones Show, Sunday Night Live. I'm your guest host, Roysha. I'm in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And like I was saying, we got a whole hour left. I mean, feels like we covered a lot of ground, but we haven't even really gotten started. Just because it's like, and I'll say this before I finish what I was going to say, but the great Rex Jones, wow, he's going to be a star. Rex Jones was just laying it down. Before I was coming on the show here, before I was live on the air, I was sitting here listening to Rex, and all I kept thinking was, there's a chip off the old block. Rex Jones, you're going places, brother. Thank you for saying the quiet part out loud. Always, always. And what would you expect? I mean, could you imagine growing up with the great Alex Jones? Wow, my mind is blown. You know, I don't think I would have been as, I don't think I could be the Roysha that you see before you today had I grown up in the Alex Jones household, but that's okay. I mean, we find a way to meet in the middle of the road, meet on the path to victory. And we need everybody we can get. We need the homosexuals. Like, think of Fox News. Bunch of homosexuals up and down the roster, right? Bunch of masculine voiced women. And God love them. You know, they agree with us on 80% of things, right? They agree with us on most of the issues. But what about the pivotal issues? What about the nuts and bolts? Do the nuts and bolts even matter? Of course the nuts and the bolts don't matter. I mean, why would the nuts and bolts matter? To anybody out there, you're getting high. You're drinking. You're having a good time. You know, you're discoing. You're still living in the disco. Some of you boomers are still living in the 1970s disco era. You're getting high. You're at the disco. You're every woman. You're frozen right there in front of your television when John F. Kennedy had his head blown off in that convertible that day there in Dallas, Texas. And yeah, we could look at that. And I'm sorry here. I've got some electrolytes. And for all those out there don't know, when you transition, the starter kit is a wig like this, and you get a bone color, an off-white or vanilla Stanley. That's kind of like the bougie girl glow up starter kit, right? And I don't like to culturally appropriate. And if I was going to say this was somebody's hair, it certainly wouldn't be a black woman's hair, but it's my hair because I bought it. I bought this hair, so this is my hair. And anybody who has a problem with that, anybody who has a problem with the hair that I bought for $19.99 off of Amazon, if you have a problem with that, you take it up with your misogynistic, neocolonial, patriarchal, outdated, obsolete, obtuse worldview. You take it up with them. You take it up with those people. Because I'm going to wear my hair. I bought this hair. It doesn't matter if it's a white girl's hair. Why can't black women have white woman's hair? Why can't black women have white women's hair. Why? Why should we be deprived of the genetics, you know, the genetic experience of white women's hair? Why? Why can't I have a white woman's hair? Hell, why can't black women start identifying as white women? Why don't we see more trans race? That's the real, you know, out of all the serious things we could talk about today, I don't think anything's more pertinent. Why don't you see more trans race? What is the master race? What is the good race to be? Who has all the benefits? See, because if, you know, and it's either way, it's like if black people have all the benefits, then why don't you see more white women, you know, identify some of these liberal white women identifying as black women? And vice versa. I mean, if white women have it so good, why don't you see some of these far left LGBTQ activists identifying as white women? Food for thought. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what that's about. Trans race is the next evolution of the non-binary movement, of the non-binary philosophy. We're going to do trans race. Yeah, because, I mean, what does race really even matter? Even that's a social construct, ain't it? Ain't it? I mean, the entire identity of the black woman is built on this 400, 500 years of oppression, but then race itself is nothing more than a construct, right? Where white people have convinced us that they're better than us, and that's why we wear their hair, right? Because we want to be white. You know, I don't want to be white. I just like the way it look. I like the color. I like the color of the hair. I like the way it flows. It had nothing to do with whiteness. It had nothing to do with whiteness. And when I grew up in the neighborhood, a lot of black women had weave and wigs and whatnot. And they all seemed to be white women's wigs. I don't remember too many people wearing wigs or wearing weaves. And the hair was natural. They don't even make natural. Well, they do. They actually do. They do make natural Afro wigs and whatnot. But you didn't see that too often. More often than not, and maybe this is a microcosm and symptomatic of the underlying political culture in America that's breaking this country's back, is I actually think there are too many black women that secretly aspire to be white women. Can I say that on the show? Is that okay for me to say? I don't know. But, I mean, look at it. Why do all these black women wear their hair like white women? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I even feel it myself as a black woman. When I was on Amazon and I was trying to find a decent wig, because, you know, they send you a gift card. They send you a coupon or a promo code from the Transgender University of America, or of the Americas, Transgender University of the Americas. They send you a promo code and you get one free wig when you transition, right? You get one free wig when you transition. And this was my one free wig. But when I'm on Amazon and I'm browsing and I'm thinking, man, what speaks to the transgender that's been living caged up inside of me? And for some reason, I don't know if I've been conditioned to accept the white supremacy, if I have like Stockholm syndrome whatever the case may be. I'm not sure. But the wig that just jumped right off of my phone screen, jumped right out of the screen at me and said, I'm the right one. This is the one. It's the one you're looking at. You know, and what should I apologize? I'm sorry, okay? To all of my super culturally ethnic black folks out there who, you know, power to the people, right? I'm sorry. When I was looking on Amazon, the only thing that stuck out was this one, you know? But I am very proud of my pro-life, sometimes identifying as a black woman identity. Very proud. And I want to emphasize the black. I am a black woman, and I would like to be respected. I would like to be shown the respect and the support of a black woman. And when you guys tease me and you say, well, you know, maybe you should commit suicide. It's like, dude, get some more Chaka Khan in your life, dude. You got to go and touch some grass. I'm living my best life. I'm living my best life. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Go ahead, turn that Chaka Khan off. Let the haters listen to Chaka. I mean, how can you hate? How can you live with that hate in your heart when that Chaka Khan comes on? Don't you see? Everybody should want to be a woman. That's what Chaka was really saying. Go ahead, you cut the Chaka off. Everybody wants to be a woman. Everybody has a woman inside of them. That's the point of the song. And I'm just living my best life, and I want to empower and encourage others to live in their authentic truth. You know, whether you're a man or you're a woman, you're somewhere in between, you're fluid. You know, whether you're even human. You know, you got furries and pixies and two spirits and three spirits, and I have several spirits, and right now all of them are telling me the place for me is the WNBA. The place for me is in the Women's National Basketball Association. Because I'm every woman. I'm them. I'm going to go elevate the game. I'm going to go elevate the women's game. It's going to be exhilarating. I mean, honestly, let's just cut through the nonsense. How many people out there would be buying tickets if you knew I was playing in the WNBA? You got to watch that. How many people of you out there would buy some tickets? Come on now. You all know that you would buy some tickets to see that. Look at the stuff we watch. We watch grown men. We watch grown men and grown women get together and power slap each other. Yeah, just get together, stand on a podium, stand at a fixed little podium. Bring some of that power slap footage up there in the studio if you can. But we watch, we go to events where men and women, grown men and women, get up at the podium and they powder their hands and they slap each other. I mean, you know you want to see me push the ball full court like you saw in the highlight there, fake a pass behind the back, too long step off and take off and boom! Boom, just dunk it. That's entertainment. That's entertainment. Is that what we're trying to do here? Isn't that what the WNBA is all about? Is it to entertain and to evolve the game? Of course, it's only a matter of time. There you go. You got some good American sports here. The power slap. And there you got two who look like they were probably assigned female at birth, but who can be sure? And you don't really see many men or assigned male at birth power slapping against the assigned female at birth. I wonder why that is. I wonder why the power slappers don't have, because certainly, I mean, this space and opportunity for a unisex event is all but obvious. I mean, why wouldn't we just have men and women or whatever the case? Let's just mix them all up. Let's just let the biological men power slap the women, right? Let's see this here, this power slap. This is, wow. Oh, she loaded up. Whoa, what? Oh, she's tough as nails. Look at that. She's smiling. She ate that. Let's see her shot. Let's see what she has on the back end here. One of them have to get slapped pretty hard, huh? Oh, no. She took her hit and she's out. Okay. Well, you guys know. I hope you guys have power slap. It's cool. You know, it's an okay spectacle. But my point is, basketball has a little bit more nuance to it. A little bit more exciting, right? A little bit more fine details that you got to pick up on. Okay, let's see here. Let's see, can we get a good slap out of here? All right, got the ref there. The ref's a male. At least he looks like a male. You got the ref there. The ref's giving some instructions on what's the legal way to slap. That's cool. And I don't even know if I don't even like the inequality of that. Like in my mind, as far as gender equality goes, I don't like to see when the female athletes or participants have to be subject to all of the masculinity, in the referees or the officials, because obviously they probably come from a cis normative worldview, and how could they ever truly officiate women with their male cis normative worldview? Yeah, and you know, we're not really getting much action here, but go and watch. Go and watch Power Slap. Point is, you know, basketball, you can pull the Power Slap down if you want. Basketball is a much better game. Think about basketball is all the players are involved in all of the game at all times. All the players on the field court of competition are involved in all of the play at all times. And that just makes basketball players have to deal with more variables, quickly. Quick adjustments. And once you learn to look at the game for those small adjustments that have to be made on the fly in transition, no pun intended, okay, just a little pun there, in transition, you there's really no better game. I mean, the only game you could say is comparable to basketball is hockey. And I've said this before. I said it when Jack made the game-winning goal against the communist Canadians, the Olympics. I have great respect for the hockey players because they have that same sort of game. It's perpetual motion. And they got to do it on skates with a stick, which just makes it all the more difficult. So actually, hockey is probably a more difficult game pound for pound than basketball. But basketball is one of the most beautiful games you could play. And we just want our WNBA to have some equality. We want some equality. We want some equity of skill and talent and size and athleticism. It's like, why should the NBA get all the good transgenders? Why should the NBA? I mean, we know. I mean, I'm not the only one. Come on. I know you see how these guys are dressing, going to the games. I'm not the only one. I'm just the one who's willing to go out front with this, okay? A lot of those boys dressing like they're one gumball away from a three snaps and a Z. I don't know if you guys know what three snaps and a Z is. If you grew up in the neighborhood, three snaps, right? A lot of those boys are three gumballs away from three snaps and a Z themselves. You know, they got the bell bottoms and the ruffle shirts and the belly out, the crop top. And, you know, I've been looking at a lot of that. You know, I've been looking, trying to, it's hard. Like, I had to wear a suit today because my trans wardrobe is not caught up to my trans liberation. And, you know, now I have to be bogged down by the unequal distribution of wealth. And why should Elon Musk get $1 trillion and I don't have enough money to have an entirely new transgender wardrobe? You know, a pair of 6-inch stilettos and a nude bodysuit, a couple of G-strings or whatever the case may be. I don't even know. I haven't even gotten that far yet. I've only been here for 5 days, guys. Give me time. I promise. It'll happen. But there's a lot of those NBA players in there. You know, they're three snaps and a Z away from a WNBA bid themselves. And that would make the game great. It would help the game. That's what people don't realize. I don't think people see the silver lining here, that if we let all of the men assigned at birth persons, the assigned male at birth persons play with the women, the women's game is only going to get better. It's going to get better, I think. You know, unless you say the women are actually as good or better than all of the males assigned at birth. And if you think that, then more power to you. I think we should test it out. I think we should put it to the test once and for all. Once and for all. And if you know, when we do this, once we do this, and for some reason, the women over there in the WNBA, the great, talented young women over there in the association, decide that it's truly unfair, and the coaches and the trainers and the agents and the WNBA front office and the players get together and decide that we have to set some real boundaries around transgenders, black women who are liberated later on in life from joining our league. You know, as a black woman supporting other black women, I have to get on board with that. Who would I be? What kind of Marxist would I be if I didn't get on board with women coming to a collective decision that people assigned male at birth shouldn't participate in their safe space? Who would I be to try and fight that? But we have to test it out, because there is an unknown here, and we can't have an unknown. We cannot have an unknown. There is a genuine unknown. There are a lot of people out there who believe that Roysha would not be dominant in the WNBA. There are a lot of people out there who believe that. And you know what? Sometimes I sit up at night and sitting in my bedroom or on my porch, and it's a nice perfect temperature evening and overcast. I'm looking at the stars and the moon, and I'm just thinking about life. A lot of times I question my own ability. You know, that's part of why I'm doing this. I question my own ability. I look at the women's game sometimes and I think, man, am I inferior to these women? And there's some damn good women. I mean, damn good. I'm not kidding. I mean, there's some damn good assigned female at birth persons in the WNBA. Damn good. And I'm being dead serious. They're damn good. Some damn good. Like Paige, for example. Damn good. And she worked her butt off. She worked hard. Single father. Was the type of player to be at the gym when everybody else wanted to go home, even the boys. She was the type of player that would be at Lifetime Fitness dribbling a basketball until her little heart was content, or until she got better to whatever standard or goal she was chasing. She would be bouncing the basketball until her little heart was content, when even the boys would have called it a night. And I'm sure the same is true of many of the other assigned female at birth persons in the WNBA. Hardworking, good, skilled. Physical limitations, the way the female body is built. For some, yeah, for most, almost all. You have a few that can dunk. And, you know, I mean, what does that mean? What is dunking? Dunking isn't the whole game. Dunking isn't the whole game. There's much more to the game than dunking. Hell, I know a bunch of men that can't even dunk, but I can dunk. You know what I'm saying? Pull that clip back up as we roll out here, the Alex Jones Show, Sunday night live on the Alex Jones Network. Let's pull that clip up, that full court clip with the fake behind the back pass, because as Roysha signs off tonight, I want you to see what's coming. What's coming to the WNBA, a WNBA game near you. It's been another episode. Tuesday, Minnesota primary election. Myself and the great Mike Lindell. Godspeed. God bless America.
New grape flavor, bovine colostrum gummies. Yeah, baby. Yeah, these are the best. Support your gut with these grape gummies. Get yours now. All-new Groovy Grape Bovine Colostrum Gummies have arrived. They're sweet, they're groovy, and they're ready to roll. Don't miss out. Get yours today. Oh, yeah, baby. The globalists are poisoning your family. Fight back with superfood gummies, vitamins, powerhouse probiotics, plus an organic fruit and veggie blast. For the resistance, get them now. Now that's how you stick it to the globalists. Tastes like pure victory, baby. The AlexJonesStore.com.
Alex Jones is off the air.
There's a lot of noise right now.
Taking me off the air. It is beyond essential that you continue to spread the word about the broadcast and continue to support us.
That's usually when it matters most, to have people in your corner who don't flinch. We've been a partner of this program and of Alex's for a long time.
I'm handing out ice water in the Sahara. I mean, it is such the top rated, the biggest company, because they're the best. And he's a patriot.
We're not going anywhere, and that commitment runs to you. Here's the part that matters. With us, it's 8% when you buy and 0% when you sell. And here's something else. After you make your first purchase and become a client, if you're holding metals you bought somewhere else, bring them to us. We'll help you liquidate them. No commission. That means even if you didn't originally buy them from us, we'll still take care of you. That's not a promotion. It's not something that's for a limited time only. That's just the way we do business. Give us a call and we'll bend over backwards to help you.
Visit kepm.com/gold to get started, or give us a call at 720-605-3900 and let us help you make room for what matters most.
Spot price of the metal in the ground. Manufacturers, miners haven't even touched it yet. Then they pull the metal out of the ground. They dig their tunnels. They drive it to the refinery. They melt it down, make it into a coin or a bar. That's wholesale. That's usually 3 to 5% over spot. We charge 8% on top of wholesale. When you liquidate, we charge zero.
Buy gold and silver bullion at wholesale. You can look every day what the price is. Type in what's wholesale gold and silver. And then you get it from them with a little processing fee. And then they buy it back for nothing with no cost. That's unprecedented. It's so easy. kepm.com/gold. Get a free telephone consultation email. You call 720-605-3900, 720-605-3900.
Who the hell is that?
I just got a call from Rob. He said he saw some goblin riding a crocodile lurking around our studio.
I found you, Alex. My crocodile monsters and I are onto you now. There is nowhere left to run. Best damn day of my life.
Yeah, ain't it?
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show here on the Alex Jones Network, Sunday Night Live. I'm your guest host, Roysha, the Billy the Beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I just want to say before we head out, I'm still getting used to my many spirits. And because I'm getting used to my many spirits, I lose track of time. Plus, Shaka Khan gets to playing, and that's how the disco works. You know, you're there, that music gets to rolling, and you kind of lose yourself. So we have a whole nother segment. It's not over, and that's a good thing because the most important, I almost missed the most important piece. The most important piece is Tuesday. The most important piece is really how much do you value your citizenship. That's what's most important. But if we're talking systematically, sort of sequential, the most important thing coming up is Tuesday primary elections, midterms here in the great state of Minnesota, 32nd state of the union, midterm elections, cultural epicenter of American politics, belly of the beast. We have a primary election on Tuesday, where myself and the great Mike Lindell will be at the top of the ballot, and we are in what would appear to be a gridlock against the establishment rhinocrats. It's interesting, you know, and now that I'm a black woman, I don't want to be a DEI hire, right? I don't want the WNBA to draft me because I'd be the first or one of the first, or at least one of the publicly admitted trans athletes, transgenders. I don't want to be drafted because I'm trans. I want to be drafted off the merit. I want to be evaluated based on the things that I could do with a basketball, the things that I bring to the game. But now that I'm a black woman, I really see the DEI of this Republican Party. I mean, here in Minnesota, in both races, the establishment, all of the Republican pundits and the big money from Washington, D.C. to California, all the big money is on two women candidates. And they tell us that the only way the Republican Party can win, can be successful, is if we run two women. Well, I'm every woman. So what better DEI candidate could you run in the state of Minnesota, this left-leaning Marxist, openly Marxist, BLM Marxist, never forget the founder of BLM said on the record, we are trained Marxists. Who better to run now than me? I'm a black woman. I'm a sometimes identifying trans black woman. First United States, first transgender United States Senate nominee born in the 1990s. Who better to run than me? And I'll bring Mike Lindell right across the finish line because I know Mike Lindell supports me. I talked to the great Mike Lindell this morning. He was excited about Tuesday. He was excited about the Ultra MAGA team, and we just added a punchline. We added a kicker. See, and if you don't do that, and I just got to be honest with y'all, if you don't do that, if you don't go and participate, even if you think you're going to get cheated, even if you know you're going to be cheated, you still have to play. You play until the fat lady sings, and until the last bell goes off, until the horn sounds at the end of the game. You play, and you let everybody bear witness to the cheating that takes place, the lack of integrity that takes place. You let people witness. That's important. Witnessing, the record, history. Let history reflect. There's no sane reason why in Minnesota, Mike Lindell and I don't prevail in our primaries on Tuesday, August 11th. There's no sane reason. But there's one person they fear just as much as me. It's Mike Lindell. As Mike Lindell says, the first thing, we got to deal with first things first. First things first is these elections aren't secure. Until we get these elections secure, we got problems. We got problems at BlackRock. No pun intended. We got problems. And we do have problems, and we have serious problems. But like I said it before, I'll say it again. You know, because I could walk out of here tonight, and with all the hate I've been getting, maybe one of these transgender jihadists pulls a little trans on trans violence and decides to take me out. Maybe the last time I see you, God forbid. But you know, my declaration to you is this: as I said from the first, convenience will be the death of freedom. Convenience will be the death of freedom. If you trade your freedom for security, you will have neither. And more importantly, you deserve neither. We've traded too much freedom for security, psychological security, physical security, food security, military security, all this security. They give you a false sense of security. Certainty. They make you pay for a false sense of security and certainty. And what do you get in return? Cui bono. Who benefits? Do you benefit? Are you the one benefiting? Are you getting the benefits from this deal? I don't think so. Honestly, I don't think so. Now we're trying to move some things in the right direction, and President Trump is doing some of that, but we still have our priorities wrongly ordered, in my opinion. And in my opinion, we must deport every last foreign invader that came under the Joe Biden administration. We're going to kick to an 18-minute video from the great Alex Jones and the Alex Jones Network team. Thank you to all of you in the audience. I hope you had a great evening. I hope you enjoyed the show. It's Roysha signing off this time, actually. We'll see you Tuesday for the Minnesota midterm primaries. God bless you. God bless America.
It was well known that if we got into a war with Iran where they felt that they were threatened and it was an existential conflict, that they would shut down the Straits of Hormuz, that they would use their proxies, and the proliferation of drone technology and ballistic missiles only made this worse, that they would hit all of our bases in the region, and that this exact scenario would unfold. This is where some people will say that we've been hyperbolic, where we say that this could lead to a nuclear exchange. I don't think that's off the table, because if you play out the scenarios, the military options, and you say our criteria for success is, you know, a total surrender by the Iranians, you arrive at nuclear weapons very, very quickly. And I thoroughly believe that our wars in the Middle East made us here in America less safe. They made our country less prosperous. And I don't want anything to do with sending more young men and women off to die on foreign battlefields.
The Alex Jones Network. Tomorrow's news today.
So we are 160 plus days into this full bore war. And I tell you, I don't get excited talking to Hollywood people or sports people. I don't care about all that. But Joe Kent, amazing military veteran, you name it, the former head of the National Counterterrorism Center, resigned 2 weeks into this disastrous war and blueprinted and predicted what was going to happen and said, Trump, I love you. You read his letter. We'll post it here. This is going to be a disaster. He's been proven right. And people like him are still being demonized by the corporate media that wants this war. People that lied Trump into it are seen as a hero. So it was great to be part of this debate that Brandon Strzok put out that's going to be aired in about a week on just the civil war within MAGA. But I don't think it's a civil war. I think it's people that care about America, as you've said, that are just simply trying to put their two cents in to try to correct the course. But back when you said what you said, I agree with you because I'd studied the same information, didn't have all your sources, but I thought you were right, probably right. Now you've been proven right, but I've noticed in all the interviews I've seen, you're not doing a victory lap. You seem pretty sad about the fact that you were proven right. So if you can just kind of brief the American people and brief President Trump on an off-ramp here and where you think this is going, as you were so accurate before, if we don't turn this around.
Well, we have a narrow window to actually end the war and get out of it right now. We have a tentative, not ceasefire on paper, but we're not actively shooting at the Iranians. However, President Trump believes that he needs to have a piece of paper, some sort of a formal deal. The Iranians simply will not give him a formal deal. We have galvanized the Iranian people around the current regime by killing the supreme leader, by the tragic strike that we did against the girls' school. The Iranians right now believe this war is existential for their survival. They're not going to give President Trump a deal. They have every incentive right now to suck us back into a protracted conflict, to make us withdraw in a military defeat. They feel they need to do that for their own deterrence. So what I think President Trump needs to do is basically walk away from the table, get our troops out of striking distance. We've already proven that our bases in the Middle East are nothing more than a strategic liability rather than an asset. So we need to get rid of those bases anyways, because what good is a military base you can't fight a war from? So get our troops out and then start negotiating with the Iranians by using our diplomatic and economic leverage. The Iranians right now, they want to shut down the Straits of Hormuz, but once we leave as the aggressor, they will lose their justification to keep the Straits shut down. We can then go to the Iranians and say, if you want sanctions relief, if you want the potential of having your assets unfrozen, simply open the Straits of Hormuz back up again. Then President Trump can actually say that he did win and now we have commerce flowing once again, we have oil and energy flowing. If he doesn't do that and he stays in a way that we can be drugged back into the war by the Iranians or even by the Israelis, then we're probably going to have to escalate to some form of a ground incursion, because we've kind of reached our effective limit of how much we can continue to bomb Iran. So this is a really critical juncture, and I can't encourage President Trump and everybody who supports President Trump enough to contact the White House, contact your representatives, and just try and put as much pressure on President Trump respectfully to say, hey, look, you've accomplished your objectives. We need to get out of this war now before it escalates further.
Now, today, what you say seems common sense. Oh, everybody knows that. But when you said that 150 days ago, how did you know that as the director of National Counterterrorism? I mean, why were you willing to resign? You said, hey, I appreciate working for you. I respect you, but I got to do this to get your attention. Obviously, behind the scenes, you tried. That's all classified. But now you're vindicated. What are the different scenarios if he doesn't get on an off-ramp now? Because when you get the Iranians, 93 million people committed, and they got the Strait of Hormuz, sure, they're going to get destroyed, but we're going to get really hurt in this process anyways. That's never what we claimed we were being signed on for. It's about getting rid of nuclear stuff or missiles, but really it's about regime change. Then you have Israel heavily admitting they're involved, driving this to use us as their proxy like NATO uses Ukraine. This is really a terrible strategy.
It's horrible. I mean, I resigned because I watched the Israeli government essentially, you know, convince President Trump that we needed to get in this war. I think that if the Israelis weren't involved, if the Israelis didn't have the level of access to President Trump and to our administration, then we never would have gotten into this war in the first place. It's a big reason why I resigned. I also could not be part of a war that's sending young men and young women off to die on a foreign battlefield. Tragically, we've already lost 18. I spent the vast majority of my young life fighting on foreign battlefields. I lost my late wife in Syria. I just personally morally cannot be part of another endless war inside the Middle East.
And so, by the way, few Green Berets have fought 11 tours, whatever it is, and lost their wife. I mean, it's not like you have particular credibility.
Yeah, yes. I spent most of my life in this fight, and I thoroughly believe that our wars in the Middle East made us here in America less safe. They made our country less prosperous, and I don't want anything to do with sending more young men and women off to die on foreign battlefields. Like, as a warrior of my generation, I will not send the next generation off to fight in these wars.
Can anybody quantify how much worse of a target or more dangerous a target than Iran is to Iraq? Well, the topography, the people, the Shiites versus the, I mean, I don't think even Iraq's a proper comparison. What about Vietnam? I mean, it's not just that I believe you. I read what other war gamers say, what think tanks say. That's why no president ever did this, yeah. Is like Iran's like Mordor with those mountains and all of it. This is not who you want to go get in a fight with. Right?
No, it's not. And, you know, you've been very, very generous and nice and said that I was accurate. And I was accurate. But this is not because, like, Joe Kent is like the smart geostrategic, you know, scholar. That we had done the war gaming for decades on what a war with Iran would look like. This was all known.
Me too.
A lot of it's unclassified. I mean, it was well known that if we got into a war with Iran where they felt that they were threatened and it was an existential conflict, that they would shut down the Straits of Hormuz, that they would use their proxies, and that the proliferation of drone technology and ballistic missiles only made this worse, that they would hit all of our bases in the region, and that this exact scenario would unfold very, very quickly. Unfortunately, because of the Israeli influence, President Trump didn't hear that information. He just heard how easy it was going to be, you know, how quick and simple. But President Trump has backed himself into a corner where he says we have to have some sort of a total surrender. We have to have a military victory. And you just simply can't do that in Iran. It is too big. The population is too dense. As you pointed out, the terrain, Iraq is relatively flat minus some mountains in the north. So we were able to basically envelop Iraq on its borders with a conventional ground invasion. Now, even trying something like that, if Iran didn't have the mountains in the era of drones and ballistic missiles, it just wouldn't be feasible. We hit that sweet spot in 2003 where we were able to do that. But then even once we got into Iraq, the idea that just simply holding ground means you win, our fights in Iraq and Afghanistan over the last 20 plus years, they prove that that's not the intent.
And Iraq, mainly the Shiites, which was just the leading edge, the Iranians, yeah. The IEDs, all of it.
IEDs, and they proved to be very, very effective fighters. And we proved that we cannot actually just dominate a society with counterinsurgency tactics, counterterrorism tactics.
Well, if the Iranians tried to dominate us, we'd kick their ass.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. So the idea that we are going to be able to get some sort of a total military victory here, it's just not feasible. Now, unless, and this is where some people will say that we've been hyperbolic, we say that this could lead to a nuclear exchange. I don't think that's off the table, because if you play out the scenarios, the military options, and you say our criteria for success is, you know, a total surrender by the Iranians, you arrive at nuclear weapons very, very quickly. And the ramifications that would have on, number one, it'd be immoral, but then also the ramifications it would have on the world stage.
Now, slow down for a minute. And we're going to end this soon, so you got to go. We've been just in a 5-hour debate, but explain a threat escalation ladder, which is standard military study and doctrine. For the average person, that's like space alien or Martian. Explain, like, this is a known war game course we're on.
100%, yeah. So the escalation ladder, it's played out exactly as predicted so far. I mean, we took a swing at Iran. Unfortunately, we went even higher order when we killed the supreme leader. And so now there's an even bigger rally around the flag effect. But then the Iranians hit us back, and then we feel that we have to hit them back. They put a blockade on the Straits of Hormuz. We put a blockade on the Straits of Hormuz. And so now we're in this scenario where we have to continue to escalate. And as you pointed out, just the characteristics of Iran, we're not going to be able to militarily beat it. So we're going to to end up in a long, protracted quagmire. And so that's why I'm advocating for us to just, hey, President Trump is a businessman. He understands if you don't like the deal and you can't negotiate a better deal, walk away. You don't need a deal to get out of the bad deal that you don't like. As a businessman, you would walk away.
But when you resigned and were very respectful and thanked Trump, you said, I'm doing this so you take a pension and get off an off-ramp. You got demonized by the surrogates. Now you're totally vindicated. And he telegraphs, criticizes Israel, so does the vice president, but still he doesn't stand up to it. You warned in your letter, and then later you said the big thing will be Israel dragging you back. How do we deal with that? Because I know you're not an enemy of Israel, and neither am I, but I am against the current leadership that isn't even thinking about their own interests, second or third order, but is only thinking about their own first order developments of greater Israel. I mean, it's true megalomania, I think. If you were Trump, let's just put it this way. If you were Trump, what would you do?
We have to go beyond just saying, hey, Israel, stop doing these strikes, or hey, we told the Israelis. I had a stern conversation with Bibi. The only thing the Israelis will actually understand is us changing the relationship with them. I would immediately cut off all military assistance. I would pull a lot of the military assistance that we give in terms of defending their airspace. I would pull that immediately, and I would say, until you do exactly what we say, this relationship is done, because they have already shown in the course of this conflict over the last 100 plus days that as we move closer and closer to getting a deal with the Iranians, the Israelis would step in consistently and take some action, whether it was killing negotiators inside Iran or whether it was taking strikes against Hezbollah and then also Lebanese civilians inside Lebanon. The Israelis would do everything they could to scuttle those efforts to get us to peace. And so the reason why the Israelis' behavior hasn't changed is because they've never gotten anything more than a stern talking to. You have to give them something more than a stern talking to. We have to start taking away the aid that we give them. Otherwise, we cannot reset the relationship. And they will continue to think, rightfully so, that they can influence our politics.
Well, there are a lot of people that think when we're like talking about reality with the Iranians, we're on their side. You fought these guys, and literally in a proxy war, and you lost family dealing with all the crazy stuff that goes over there. But this is reality. Whether you're for the war or not, it's not working as you predicted, as the Pentagon predicted, as the war games predicted. So, at the end of the day, Trump has to understand that if he just continues to play the same game, it's only going to hurt the country and hurt the world more. But then I sit back and watch the whole Israel lobby and AIPAC with it, and Thomas Massie and others, and you're talking about how we deal with them over there, cutting off the military aid so they at least don't act like they're the boss. What do we do domestically about AIPAC?
Education. I think that's really the big thing. If we look at the divide when Massie unfortunately lost his primary, most younger voters, people under the age of like 50, so Gen X, our generation, and down, they voted for Massie. They saw through the propaganda because of social media, because of new media, like what you've been doing for your entire career. But there still is a lot of older voters, the baby boomers that are watching Fox or watching New York Times. So I think the more that we can educate our parents' generation about the realities of what's taking place, I think that that's the best way. We also need to get younger people out there to vote and actually participate in primaries and participate in the process. And we need to be very loud and very vocal on this issue that we do not want foreign governments involved in our decision making. We won't let foreign governments take us off the war. Luckily, I think in the 2028 primary on both the Republican and the Democrat side, I think this is going to be a hot button wedge issue.
I agree. Last question. Obviously, I don't think Erica Kirk killed Charlie Kirk. I don't believe any of that stuff. I see the trans movement said they were going to kill Charlie. They bragged when he died. They said we did it. So I don't know the truth, but it's a huge. I mean, you're obviously got your finger to the pulse. People don't buy the official story, and I know not from you, but other sources. That meeting that I reported on that later was confirmed, where Cash Patel says we're not looking at foreign involvement. We're not looking at the. I talked to TPUSA. They said yeah, no, Cash said we're not looking at the people that said he'll be dead tomorrow. You said I don't know who the foreign thing is. I just know we have these hits. I don't know. And so I'm going to ask you to give me answers. But people are going to ask me, hey, ask Joe Kent about this. This thing just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's so many other big issues out there. But just I didn't tell you I was asked this question. I just thought of it at the end, so it wasn't pre-planned. But just in general, what do you make of that whole fiasco? And, months and months and months, almost a year into this, September's coming up in just like a month and a half. What do you, gut level, what do you think's going on here, and why is this such a big, because we all love Charlie. I mean, he called me up like about before he got, killed, and said, keep pressing the Epstein thing, get it out, keep pushing against the Iran war, they're pushing it. He was a great guy, but I have to tell you, most things I can figure out, Joe, I can't figure this out.
Well, you know, we were removed from continuing to investigate when we had legitimate foreign leads. And now foreign nexus, foreign leads, that could be a foreign person, that could be a country, that could be a foreign business. Now, in an investigation, when you're looking at things, you run down 100 leads and 99 and a half of them are absolute garbage. So maybe the leads that we were looking at wouldn't have led anywhere. However, I don't believe that we did a thorough job of investigating all the different angles. That doesn't mean I don't think the guy that's in custody did it. That's going to play out in court. I was looking at the more of the external factors. I still have a hard time with the fact that there was people that were posting on social media ahead of time who said that Charlie Kirk was going to die that day in Utah, in UVU. And so to me, it's just like, well, there was obviously other people involved.
And Charlie's own people you talked to him, Harrison, a month before, Charlie thinks he's going to get killed.
Yes. So there's obviously, I think, more investigative work that needs to be done there. Now, is the Robinson case going to be the catalyst for more of that? That I don't know. But, you know, what I get frustrated with is where there are people who are asking very, very legitimate questions, that there has been a chorus coming from, you know, a certain element in the media that said, stop asking questions. And now they're going after people who are asking questions. And so, I mean, just like Charlie Kirk himself said, like, never stop asking questions because it's the only thing that keeps us free. So I think there's a lot more answers that we need in terms of, you know, who killed Charlie Kirk, how and why.
Well, it's like a Rubik's Cube, and I care about Charlie, too, but it's something you can't, because I'm being honest, people ask, what do you really think? I don't know. It's so weird, and none of it adds up. But exactly, why are they ordering any foreign involvement, even if it's tenuous or, you know, you're not sure, maybe it's nothing. Why not have a foreign investigation if there's nothing to hide? To me, that's when I go, I'm going to be completely honest, folks. There's been a lot of made-up stuff on the side against TPUSA and all that. But at the same time, there's a lot of other crazy stuff. You are working hard to defend this country and speak out, not just in your 11 tours and losing your wife in combat and all the rest of it, but what you're doing now for the country. How do people follow Joe Kahn? How do they support what you're doing? Because I'm really impressed with what you're doing. We're really thankful for you.
I think social media, X and Instagram are the place where I'm the most active.
What's the handles?
Joe Kent, 16JAN19 on both.
Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you.
Lord Vader, the rebellion is exposing your lies. We are the resistance, and we're taking down the Empire's deep state machine once and for all.
Get this guy off my screen. Can we go to clip 50? Clip 50. Guys, what's going on back there? All I wanted was clip 50. I sent it this morning. You should have had it. I'm not mad at the crew. I am not mad at the crew, but I am mad at you. Go to the alexjonesstore.com and make the purchase now.
Dirty, dark, dastardly villain is after the methylene blue formula.
Magical methylene blue. Don't wait. Get yours today while supplies last.
This shower filter slays 95% of the lead, 99% of the chlorine, and keeps that damn atrazine out of your water. Protect yourself. Don't let them turn you gay. Purify it now.
Mother, do you really want to shower with me? Do you want to clean everything? Oh, mother!
I'm not gay, you are.
Ha ha ha!
real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight?